You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've been listening, you know I'm a big Brewers fan. They just had a four-run inning. They were up 12-5 in the bottom of the eighth inning. I don't know about you all, but I might smell a hamburger in the offing that might be free. We'll get around to the Brewers as that game progresses. I'll keep you up to date. You don't have to go anywhere. But there is incredibly important business of our democracy and for every single citizen of these United States to be paying attention to today. The continuing drama is ongoing in Texas and, in fact, in a small state court in southern Illinois. We've got just the expert to talk with us about the stakes of Governor Greg Abbott out of Texas, his plan basically to execute Donald Trump's direction to cheat Texas Democrats out of their congressional representation in advance of the 2026 midterms. This has set off a firestorm of debate amongst Democrats and good government organizations. And we are joined for the first half hour of today's show by Ruth Conniff. She is the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. She has an incredible background. She formerly served as editor-in-chief of the Progressive magazine. She's written for all sorts of publications, The Nation, The New York Times, and she's here with us this afternoon. Welcome, Ruth. We've got so much news going on with the story out of Texas. I'm so glad you're here. You penned an editorial for the Wisconsin Examiner arguing that Democrats should not engage in a race to the bottom in partisan gerrymandering in response to Texas's attempts to do so and deprive Democratic voters in Texas of their congressional representation. Thanks so much for being here and sharing your views with all of us this afternoon, Ruth. I just wanted to share with our listeners before we get into the meat of your op-ed what occurred this afternoon in Illinois. So there's a bit of detailed background here, but in short, folks, if you haven't been in the weeds on everything that's been going on in Texas, Texas House Democrats fled the state to Illinois a little bit over a week and a day or so ago, and they've been in Illinois ever since. Subsequently, the Attorney General out of Texas, Ken Paxton, has issued, has filed lawsuits. Greg Abbott is agitating. And then Republican Texas House members effectively issued arrest warrants for the House Democrats in Texas. And they filed in Illinois state court, in a small state court in the southern part of Illinois, to execute those warrants in Illinois. Of course, Texas law enforcement has no jurisdiction in Illinois, so they had to go to an Illinois court. That court this afternoon denied Texas's attempts to enforce those arrest warrants in Illinois, stating somewhat perfunctorily that this court has no subject matter jurisdiction over the matter. So that is what has happened just within the last couple of hours. But let's get into the meat of the debate, Ruth. Tell us what your view is. And if I've missed or gotten any of those details wrong, please correct me and tell folks why you think Democrats shouldn't engage in this race to the bottom when it comes to gerrymandering.
Well, first of all, the whole drama in Illinois is both fascinating and very familiar in Wisconsin because, yes, of course, we had our own Democratic legislators flee to Illinois to try to stop Act 10, or at least to delay and bring a lot of public attention to that effort. And that has been an ongoing battle that has been at the center of politics in our state now for a decade and a half. And, you know, I think that these kinds of moves by Democrats are really important. I think it's just, we are in an incredible political crisis. It was presaged by the Walker era in Wisconsin, which was also all about incredibly divisive politics and an attack on public institutions and democracy. And, you know, we're clawing our way back in Wisconsin. So I think here in Wisconsin, we have a very special view of this gerrymandering fight that's going on in Texas and now, you know, metastasizing across the country. And that view has to do in part with the fact that we have just now recovered from the worst in the nation partisan gerrymander of our state by the Republicans when they had trifecta control of government in Wisconsin. And the fight for fair maps, which went on for years, flooding the Capitol with members of the public who are saying this is just a fundamental democracy issue. It is beyond partisanship. It's not about which party controls things. It's fundamentally about whether we have a fair system, people have the right to vote, whether voters choose their politicians or politicians get to choose their voters so that they can remain in power. Those were powerful arguments, and they made an impact on the state. And I think we're critical to reversing this insane right-wing control that was really liquidating civil society, starting with schools and teachers and moving through firefighters and public safety and all of the institutions that, you know, are our common interest in protecting in Wisconsin. So we finally have fair maps in Wisconsin after that long, long, long battle. And so now suddenly to see Democrats across the country saying, you know what, we have to fight fire with fire. We're going to pick our own voters. We're going to rig the maps, and we're going to try to reverse the 5-seat gain that Trump and the Republicans can make in Texas by gerrymandering California, New York, maybe Illinois, and, you know, just fight this battle the same way that the Republicans are fighting it. I have to say that for a Wisconsinite who's followed the fair maps fight, to see that reversal is pretty stunning, because it's really, it is an emergency. Absolutely. We are living under an authoritarian regime that has no respect for the rule of law. So I think it is reasonable to think about out of the box strategies to try to fight back, but to absolutely give up the moral high ground and to say, we're willing to cheat just as badly as their side cheats. We just have to win political control, I think is a major loss. And I think it's a major loss for a few very big reasons. One is it's just impractical. Republicans control more state legislatures and have more trifecta control of states than Democrats do. And if this thing continues to grow nationwide, at the end of the day, Democrats are not going to win this way. Yes, we can claw back those 5 seats in California. But beyond that, as it moves out across the country, I don't think that this mid-decade redistricting idea is a winner just on pragmatic grounds. But that's really not the most important reason. I think the most important reason that it's the wrong move is that Democrats are in a real crisis since Trump was elected a second time. And that crisis has to do with how did it happen that most voters decided that they would prefer an authoritarian who is going to burn down the U.S. government and all of the historic commitments that we've had as a people to the rule of law and democracy and fair public institutions. How is it that they chose that? And Democrats have to figure it out. They have to figure out how do they make the case to voters that, in fact, this is not the best option that they have. And the Democrats as a group do represent the interests of working class voters in particular who are really attracted to Trump. And I think going along with Gavin Newsom's plan to just rig the game so Democrats can claw back some power is the wrong road in a long-term way for Democrats. And it's super frustrating for people, I get it, because I've had a lot of these debates to think about the long road when we have an emergency right now. But it's the only way that we recover from this crisis in our national politics is that Democrats need to think about, what about all the rural areas of Wisconsin and all the formerly manufacturing heavy districts across the industrial Midwest that they have lost, that were solidly blue and are now solidly red? How are they making the case to voters that they really represent voters? And if the Democrats can't figure out that and can't put all of their energy into solving that, and instead, in the same way that there is an arms race in campaign finance and Democrats need to go to billionaires because Republicans go to billionaires and Democrats need to redraw maps because Republicans redraw maps, that contest is not going to result in a good government for people. And it's not going to result in an ability of Democrats to truly distinguish themselves from Republicans and make the case. So that is my argument.
Folks, that's Ruth Conniff. She's the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. for argument's sake, and just to do a little devil's advocacy with you, Ruth, I have two responses. And one is, potentially, if we were to add up the seats, I know you did the states math, but someone is doing the addition on the seats. Let's say it was pragmatically possible for Democrats to do this. Let's further make the argument that if Democrats didn't do this, Donald Trump will not only be seizing control of the Washington, D.C. police force, but seizing control of police forces based on completely bogus allegations of national emergency in cities like Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, and across the country. And let's assume further that Donald Trump continues that declaration of a national emergency throughout the 2026 midterms, and that he uses that control of local police forces and, frankly, U.S. military forces on the ground to quell otherwise protected protests and to intimidate voters in the midterms of 2026. And further, let's assume that he uses not just that militarized military against its own citizenry, not only the seizure of local law enforcement, but his efforts to seize election data in all of these same jurisdictions, as he has been trying to do for quite some time. And let's assume further that by doing this, he is able to effectively wrest control, again, of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And let's assume that his authoritarianism gets worse. In other words, I am painting the Armageddon scenario. Does your analysis still hold? Because doesn't it presume that we will actually have a functioning democracy with representative government after Donald Trump is done trying to wreck it? And if that's not actually true, then doesn't that require meeting fire with fire in this moment?
Well,
and let me just throw one other thing out there. And we're coming up on time, so I'm going to set out this massive hypothetical, Ruth, which I love to do with my guests, and then, you know, go to a short little bit of messages. But let me throw this other pragmatic concern out there, or potential solution. And that is one that Common Cause, and we'll talk a little about them on the other side, mentioned. What if anything that Democrats do in Democrat-controlled states explicitly by legislation requires the undoing of the hyper-gerrymand after the next census? In other words, returns it to the independent redistricting committees. What if that legislation now requires those in states that don't yet have them? Is this not a moment to effectively fight fascism and maybe make independent redistricting committees the standard? We discuss more with Ruth on the other side after my lengthy hypothetical. And each and every one of you, 855-752-4842. Is democracy in the balance? Do Democrats need to fight fire with fire? We discuss more on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 12 wins for the Brewers. Free burgers at George Webb's, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. In case you missed the breaking news, Brewers just logged their 12th win. It'll be free burgers from George Webb for everybody. Last time this happened, they gave away 168,000 of them. But we're talking about the important business of democracy first here today with our special guest, Ruth Conniff. She's the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. Gavin Newsom has announced this big press conference for tomorrow talking about fighting back. We're debating whether or not Democrats should, frankly, fight fire with fire. Greg Abbott, governor of Texas, following marching orders from Donald Trump and his billionaire overlords, has said they're going to redistrict away at least 5 seats from Democrats in the state of Texas, effectively depriving Texas voters of their right to choose their own elected officials. And now Democratic states are thinking about doing the same. Ruth just penned an op-ed in the Examiner, which we'll post to our show notes from today, saying Democrats should not engage in this race to the bottom, mutually assured destruction, if you will, and that we need to resist those impulses. Before the break, I posed to Ruth a very lengthy hypothetical. I will summarize it by saying, what if this is the moment of Armageddon? What if this is Donald Trump really locking in fascist or authoritarian control? What if that is this moment? And further, what if Democrats could engage in this responsive, hyperpartisan gerrymandering with caveats in that legislation or in companion legislation that requires that to be undone at the time of the next census and locks in independent redistricting committees? California's already got that. That's wonderful. But what about that hypothetical? What if we're really looking at over into the abyss, Ruth? Does it change your analysis?
Well, first of all, I understand your passion and I agree with your sense that this is an emergency and goddammit, we want to see the Democrats do something. So I feel like this debate, as we're all having it within progressive and Democratic circles, is it starts edging into a debate about, well, should the Democrats just roll over or should they do something? And I guess that I understand the desire to see something done. That doesn't mean this is the thing. So for your hypothetical, I don't even think it's a hypothetical. I think we're there. I think we are at this Armageddon point. The question is, what's the right thing for the Democrats to do? And just because this is the first sort of big, loud, high profile thing that people are feeling makes a difference. You know, Cory Booker setting the indoor record for talking while standing up wasn't it, right? Nothing came of that. So this feels like, okay, here's a thing that could work. But I just don't think that that actually means that this is the way we rescue democracy. We rescue democracy by persuading people that they actually want democracy, for one thing, and by offering a party that represents that. So saying, well, we have a party that kind of represents that and we'll do so in the future. And after we eliminate all the safeguards for fair maps now, we promise we'll restore them later. But just right now we need to do this thing because we don't actually have the votes. You know, that's not the way you do it. You know, that's not a persuasive argument for democracy. And I think having people really stand up and cohere and feel that they have common interests and that they, across their many cultural differences, which the Republicans are forever exploiting, actually do want to stand together and have a fair society where they actually have a say in their government, I think that requires not saying, but the way we're going to do that is we're going to have these politicians who are in safe seats who don't have to be responsive to the voters for so long as it takes to get us to the other side of this authoritarian problem. Because the authoritarian problem was a long time in the making, and it's not going to be undone by having three Democrats in safe seats in the House of Representatives, nor are those Democrats going to be able to stop all of these things that you're talking about. I mean, Trump riding in to cities, and the cities he's reeled off are all Democratic cities led by Black mayors, not a coincidence, sending in federal troops to seize control of those places. We need a majority of Americans to recognize that for what it is and stand up to it. And it's not going to be because somehow magically with a narrow majority, the Democrats are going to get a spine in the House of Representatives. I don't think that's going to be the thing that turns the tide here.
Let's explore, because this to me is the scariest moment that we've been in, especially given what's happening with the election data that he's trying to access, as well as, frankly, turning the military against its own citizens and trying to seize control of local law enforcement. And there are decisions coming down, and some today, where courts seem utterly confused and frankly kind of feckless in the face of their constitutional role to be a check on the executive branch. If there's no democracy left, then what are we fighting over?
We have to fight for democracy, and we have to engage the many voters who are not voting at all and who don't see a clear enough difference between the two parties. And we've got to insist on that. We need the courts desperately. We've had some really important court decisions that have reined in this administration a little bit. It's been the only thing that's been effective so far. And, you know, we really have to band together and make it happen, man. We need real leadership, visionary leadership.
I mean, the decision out of the DC Circuit Court today on the USAID impoundment was just shocking. And if folks don't recall this, the Impoundment Act was enacted following Richard Nixon's refusal to spend appropriated funds on certain environmental remediation and regulation. It led to the Impoundment Act, which basically said if Congress appropriates, a president can't refuse to spend it. You have to go through rescission. And there is actually language in that act from 1973-ish, I think, that says this shall not inhibit parties' claims or defenses. And yet the Supreme Court, excuse me, the D.C. Circuit Court ruled that, yeah, if you were supposed to receive that money, you don't have standing to sue. I'm concerned about this moment, Ruth. How do we get people into the streets? How do we do better? We're going to keep discussing. Ruth, will you come back soon?
Yes, I certainly will.
Let's keep this discussion going. Folks, you're going to want to stay right where you are. We've got Representative Ann Rowe, a newish assemblywoman in Wisconsin. We're going to discuss her road to her elected office and her thoughts on these very issues up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. It is Wednesday. It is 4:30, and that means it is time for Broad Appeal. This is a segment where I talk to amazing women in elected offices, candidates, women leaders across our great state and beyond. We've got just one leader with us today. Her name is Ann Rowe. She is the assembly person for the 44th District out of Janesville here in the great state of Wisconsin. Welcome to the show, Representative Rowe. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh my gosh, my absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Good, good fun. So you are a relatively new elected official. You ran and won first in 2024. Why in the heck would anyone with a perfectly lovely life and kids and all kind, you own a small business, you got all this busyness going on in your life. Why, especially in this moment, did you decide to raise your hand and run for office?
Well, great question, Maggie. And I would be lying if I didn't confess that I asked that of myself, you know, pretty much on a weekly basis. Truth of the matter is I ran for Congress in 2022. Did not work out quite as the way I had hoped. I learned a tremendous amount, and that fire did not go away. People asked me if I was sad. Well, I wouldn't describe it so much as sad as more mad. I mean, you don't get into a race to lose. So I took all that I learned, those networks and those people that I got to meet that I would have never met otherwise, and sat, thought about it, and then thought, nope, let's go again. Let's go after this seat. My friend was retiring, Sue Conley. I thought, you know, it gave me an opportunity and gives me an opportunity every day to literally help somebody in the district. It's not going to make the headlines. It's not going to be big news. But, you know, connecting folks, connecting organizations with other organizations, using my business, my marketing, and my finance background to help people with messaging, help them do the math, you know, and get to some real substantive work that I enjoy immensely. So that's the reason. As I watch my friends retire and put, you know, sort of slow down in certain areas, they just look at me and just shake their heads and smile. And like, I'm going the opposite direction. So, you know.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you're doing it. I think we need more folks that have, are just regular people doing their thing, that have interests and are involved in their community, that sound like regular people, that don't sound like politicians, getting involved. And I loved, Anne, that you pointed out the fact that you can get real things done for your constituents. Right before you joined, I was talking with the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner about the gerrymandering debate that's going on nationwide right now, and what should Democrats do if Texas moves forward with its plan. And one of the keys, aside from this very specific immediate question, one of the things that I think can help people get re-engaged is through local and state government. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of what goes on in your local and state government I know we've all got R's and D's behind our name, or most of us do, but a lot of what you're getting done for people isn't partisan at all. It's basic quality of life stuff. I looked at your proposals that you've been a primary or secondary sponsor of from the assembly in these last couple of years. You're talking about school medical services, mental health and substance use disorders, and how that's handled by insurance, the eligibility for family care, of course. That's the Medicaid and Medicare debate here in the state. But these are things that are real quality of life issues. Tell me a little bit about what that's like to be one of the frontline folks for your constituents to call. And if you've got an example that comes to mind about solving everyday problems for one of your constituents, we'd certainly love to hear it.
Well, thank you. You know, I can't. It's frustrating. I'm not a terribly patient person, so this is hard. We're working through a lot of policies, you know, as we sit in the minority. It's tough to get some of those bills to see the light of day and to get substantive action taken. But what I do know is what drives me to talk about healthcare, you know, and education, and housing and mental health. Those are the fundamental foundational pieces of each and every one of our communities. Blue, red, indifferent, purple, whatever. Those are the fundamental pieces. And until we solve those, I can make the economic argument morning, noon, and night that we do not lift our communities forward as a whole until we establish those foundational pieces for everyone. Mm. And, you know, the day you tell me that somebody wakes up and says, you know, I choose to be poor and I choose to have mental health issues, that's not the case. And I find that many of my colleagues, perhaps across the aisle, both locally and beyond, you know, really sound more like the party of judgment versus public service. And mine is not to judge. You know, I believe the role of a public servant, somebody in government, and I'll tell you, Maggie, my eyes have been opened even further as to what our city can do with their hands essentially tied in terms of funding. But what happens at the county level, I don't know that people understand what happens at the county level and how that affects everyday life of literally everybody, no matter what your party preference might be. And that's what I look at. I don't look at somebody coming at me as a Dem or a Republican. If they have an issue, you know, I've got people to talk to me. I've got farmers who have said to my face, teach me how to be a Democrat and I will teach you about farming. There is a paradigm shift. And when we deal in facts and information, and those voices are heard, and we invite people to that table, and we come to them rather than expecting that people are going to show up. Mm. You know, we bring the message to them and practice that listening. I think that gets us a heck of a lot further than, you know, hollering this, that, or the other. And talk about how it affects each one of us, because...
Let me ask you maybe a bit of a deep question about that listening piece.
Okay.
And I'm going to relate it to a bit of our current events this week, right? We've got Donald Trump taking control of the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department. And in large part, what I've heard from a lot of Democrats and progressives, while accurate, I don't think reflects the listening that you just outlined as essential. Let me be clear. Here's what I mean. What I've heard from a lot of, especially progressives, but Democrats, is this is unconscionable. This is military rule. This is turning the military against its citizens. That's all true. What the piece that I don't sometimes hear is that the majority of residents in Washington, D.C. are not happy with Washington, D.C.'s safety. And yes, crime is also at a 30-year low there, but for many residents in Washington, D.C., that's still not enough.
Right.
And so there seems to be this kind of either or political debate happening, right? Like, you hear what I'm going to call a lot of exploitation of fear, no real solutions from the GOP other than let's throw the military in and you know, lock a lot of people up and forget about them, except that most people eventually get released back into our communities and we could have that discussion. And then I hear from the left, again, this pounding of the table about Donald Trump as an authoritarian. Again, true, but lacking that listening piece. What do you think Democrats need to do a better job about listening to their constituents regarding? Is there a particular area? How do you think we can listen better?
Well, I think it starts, you know, very personally with those personal networks, those community networks, those groups in which we find ourselves, and then challenge ourselves to go into those areas where the conversations are going to be tougher. So in the redistricting, District 44 picked up some outlying rural areas, some townships that typically run a little redder than Janesville is blue, right? So some of those conversations are not very easy. You know, I tend to get hammered on a couple of points there. Take notes, and I'll tell you what packs a real punch, Maggie, is circling back and saying, great, you asked me a question that I didn't know the answer to, and maybe the answer is not great. Maybe it's not going to be what I really want to talk about. But the look on their faces when I come back with it and say, you know, I brought you copies because I know you have some friends that were interested in too. Please, please share this. Here's the information I found. It's a start. And when I look at you know, my reaction to Washington, D.C. is similar. I want to scream, like, where are the good guys? Like, what are we doing? But what my parents always taught me, you know, along with public service, is that your so-called enemies or those that you find, you know, yourself not agreeing with, very often, especially if you've ever worked in customer service, there's a little nugget of truth. There's a little nugget in there that says, okay, so we have a problem. So what is that messaging? And how do we read that room? And how do we get the folks in Washington, D.C., the citizens, the people who, you know, are living there, how do we get them to take some action that is productive? Mm. I agree, it's fun to vent, and I do it all the time.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, where is that going to get me? And if I don't start in the middle, you know, we have a daughter that lives in L.A., and it's like, you can't expect somebody to cross 8 lanes of the 405, right?
Yep.
They're not going to do it.
Yep. Folks, we are joined by Wisconsin Representative Ann Rowe out of the 44th Assembly District in Janesville. I just want to lift up something that you said, Ann, that I think can and should be a differentiator for Democrats. And that is not this overcomplicating nuance, like that's fine and it's academic and we'll get into policy details. But when someone confronts you in a town hall or in a listening session with a really challenging perspective or question, and I've failed at this myself many times and doing this job right here, and they're asking or saying we should do X, Y, or Z, and it's not what myself as a centrist, pragmatic Democrat might think is a good idea. Instead of effectively defaulting into debate mode or defense mode,
right,
to take a note, say, I'm not sure I agree with that or the factual premise, but I'm going to look into that. I will get back to you. Is it okay if I come back to you and that we continue this conversation? Let's continue to try to engage. It's difficult. It's uncomfortable. But I'm going to listen to what you're saying, and we're going to rejoin. In other words, the extension of the presumption of good faith, at least for those that haven't yet disavowed you of that view of them. We're going to continue this discussion with Representative Rowe on the other side. How do we continue to listen to each other? How do we move forward? And what does she think about the gerrymandering debate going on? All that and more coming up after these brief messages.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network, and it is our special segment that we have every Wednesday at 5:30 called Broad Appeal, where I talk to female electeds, candidates, and leaders from across the state and beyond. And certainly, happy 12th win in a row to all Brewers fans everywhere. Such an exciting day for folks that love baseball here in our great state. Representative Rowe, before the break, we were talking about how to have these difficult conversations, how to keep them going. And you're talking about during the break with me something that I think gets missed a lot. And I certainly experienced it when I worked in government for Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee. Let me give you an example. I always worked in there, not always, but my most recent gig at the county was their corporation counsel. And on occasion, I would have residents or taxpayers call me directly. I'm the head of the department. I'd get the phone and I would have the conversation, whatever their concerns were. I'd try to direct them where they needed to go. I don't know. And I would follow up. I once got an email from a good friend of someone that I had helped at the county thanking me for the help that I provided to their friend. And what you were talking about was word of mouth that comes from listening and trying to, in very good faith, have these difficult discussions with people that may disagree with us or think they disagree with us or think we've got different values. Why is that important? Why do you think that these smaller interactions are really where this might be able to get a bit better, that we can bridge these gaps?
Well, I think the first part of the first key ingredient is an abiding hope, or maybe a faith that somehow we can at least communicate. You know, I'm just going to admit right here and now, my great uncle pitched for the Cubs. I'm a diehard Cubs fan.
Oh, no, Anne, don't say, forgive you for that. You could have said almost any other team other than the Cardinals, and I would have said, okay, I forgive, but the Cubs, oh, Anne, but I share your love of baseball.
So, you know, it's that eternal sort of hope or faith that something's going to turn, right?
Yes.
And that's what keeps me, and that's what keeps me engaged, and that's certainly what motivated me to run, is that, okay, come on, there's got to be something here. Right. So that's the first key ingredient in those tough conversations. And then I will tell you that I have learned so much from my 15 years of helping kids plot out their post high school pathways. And that's evolved into post college or post apprenticeship or post, you know, life changes and I need a new resume sort of thing. Right. And what is key there is, you know, I get the kids sometimes in my office who are going to sit like this and like, I already know, I know, right? And you know that person who also sits across the table with those tough issues or in those town hall meetings, right? I know everything, here I go, right? But if we put our generous caps on, provide the information, I can't make somebody absorb it or, you know, whatever, but we keep offering that message, keep inviting, keeping those doors open, keeping that conversation. When somebody figures out that they have options and that they don't have to take the party line or they don't have to take, you know, what's being fed to them, just like those kids plotting out their post-high school pathways, when they figured out that they have choices, and now I may not agree with the choice they make and I may not agree with the voters and the choices they make, but I have that faith that, like, okay, here's the info, here are the choices. If you make a better informed choice, you're going to stick with it. It's going to be sustainable. And so, you know, that might sound a little Pollyanna-ish, but, you know, I see the light go on in people when they've been invited and they're like, oh, I didn't know about that. Or I didn't realize those were the actual numbers. Or I didn't realize, okay, not a party of judgment.
Yes.
Here.
I think it's really remarkable, again, trying to open those conversations, provide information. The way that I've always viewed it as a lawyer, Anne, to relate, is I can't make my clients take my advice, but I can make damn sure they know what my best information, my Correct. Best advice, and the weight of my expertise and experience. Correct. What, in other words, I can give them my best. Yep. And once I've done that, I can feel some solace that I've done my role. I, like you, Anne, remain hopeful. I sometimes oscillate into those darker moments, but I appreciate your effort to, again, engage in these smaller conversations, which I think can accumulate and lead into bigger types of changes. Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got Assembly District Representative out of Janesville for the 44th District, Anne Rowe, with us today. She was first elected in 2024, ran for Congress in 2022. One of the things that I like to ask all of my guests that come from state and local government, Anne, because it's a little bit of fun, is there something about you that would be a complete and utter shock to folks that are listening?
Well, other than, you know, I have no poker face, so that is a shock to no one. I was thinking of two things. One, Mondays are my favorite day.
Okay, that's shocking.
Right? Because nothing's gone wrong Monday morning yet. And if it does, I have all week to fix it. So, you know, by Wednesday evening, about now into Thursday, much saltier, right? The other piece is, along with being an English major, I have a double major in Latin and Greek. So there you are.
Oh, I saw that you got your BA in English and Classic Languages, Latin and Greek from Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. And we should come back and talk, you should come back and we'll talk liberal arts and your favorite books and philosophers and things. I would love that because I like to nerd out with the best of them. Big, big thanks to Representative Anne Rowe of the 44th Assembly District for today's installment of Broad Appeal. Don't go anywhere. On the other side, we're going to be joined by a new candidate for the 33rd State Senate District. He just announced his campaign today. Mike Van Someren joins us next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.